Right.
Our first phase of reopening, we're also second phase, we're kind of in phase one now where we're all working virtually, will be dependent on Georgia having 14 days of decreasing cases. And so each phase has a threshold that has to be reached. And that, I think, helped people have a starting place to think about, well, if that's the threshold, then which of my programs could really fit into that first phase? And so it gave us a way to start.
I love that organizing structure. Here in Texas, the state guidance seems to be unrelated to science or test results.
Same as in Georgia. I feel you completely. It's exactly the same. So we're like looking to the CDC and, you know, other science-based, you know, World Health Organization, et cetera. And we're going by that. Right now, Georgia is completely open. May 1st, it was like, It doesn't mean that people are out and about. There are some. Right. But most people are not just, you know, coming out and doing anything.
We heard loud and clear from our staff that they didn't feel ready. Not that we were asking them to, but they didn't feel ready to come back. And so even though our state is moving more rapidly, we just didn't feel we should follow that. It was clearly not in sync with the sentiment of our clients or our staff. So.
And I guess the last thing I want to say to you guys, and we'll talk more about it next week, is that the staff, we got so much feedback from the staff about how grateful they were that the leadership said out loud over and over up front that health and safety was the number one requirement for any reopening or phased reopening. I mean, it has helped us maintain our morale.
Yeah.
I don't see how we could do it any other way. And we are also making masks a requirement, so people will not be able to come into the building without those. We are in the process now of purchasing masks so that we can supply them for people. They don't have to bear that cost.
Are you doing disposable ones or reusable?
We're looking for cloth masks.
Yeah.
Now, and each, you know, person will have two or three so they can wear them and rotate and either wash or quarantine them.
Makes sense.
We're also looking at essentially creating an in-office schedule and an out-of-office schedule. So we're thinning out how many people are actually going to be in our office. First of all, we were already overcrowded. Like that was an issue anyway. But now with the issues around safety, like many of you, we're waiting to see what happens. Our province is starting to lift some of the restrictions, but we're only, sorry, I have an injury and I'm like trying to manage this as well. We're trying to see how that plays out, because if we have a spike in cases, then the province might clamp down on restrictions again. So it's holding fast until we see a plateau. And then once that happens, it's going to be a rotational reentry, and that rotation is also going to be heavily dependent on individuals. We're going to come up with individual reentry plans based on the needs of the staff. We have, you know, a few with chronic health concerns. We also have a few, we have many, in fact, with children, and childcare is going to be an issue because schools haven't reopened. There's a good chance that there won't be summer camps this year. All of the things that parents used to use as a way to maintain childcare throughout the summer just aren't options anymore. So we have to be sensitive and cognizant of that, because otherwise we're going to end up losing half our workforce anyway.
I'd like to speak selfishly, if I may. I've been working in the building most every day because virtually no one other than one maintenance guy is here, and we are masked when we are within proximity. I had just turned 70 and I had a heart attack 3 months ago. And when people start coming back into the building, I'm out of here. Whatever work I do from home, that's what I want to do. And I don't want to be here when the staff, or even worse, when clients are here. And our offices, we designed this building 2 years ago or a couple years ago. We moved in 2 years ago. Our offices are approximately 8x10. There is no way for a therapist to maintain a 6-foot distance between themselves and a client in that same office. And everything is going to have to either revert to the few larger rooms that we have or telehealth. Even if the therapist is on site here, they're still going to have to be speaking to clients via Zoom. And it's going to be a very, very difficult reentry to try and recreate any semblance of the way the agency had been functioning to this point.
Yeah, I think, Mark, that we've been talking here about, some of our conference rooms and whether we need to convert them into some meeting rooms, because, you know, the meetings that used to take place maybe in private offices won't be able to do that. And, we've even looked at, possibly delaying, the return to in-person board meetings even longer than is required for medical reasons, but just so that that room can be used for other purposes. Our board has actually gotten pretty good at the Zoom meetings and haven't been complaining. So we're thinking through the possibility of repurposing that space to allow people to socially distance as they begin slowly to return to the office.
Yeah, it's going to be a big rethinking.
Yeah.
I know as we've been working on our plans, so we have a COVID committee, the return committee is a subgroup that includes our chief HR and one of our somebody in charge of programs, so that we can make sure that we're coordinating both administration as well as program, because whatever we're doing for counseling will matter for finance and, you know, all those places, people that have shared offices. That one of the things we're looking at is our cleaning protocols, and that's kind of a question that you can do all the deep cleaning and sanitizing you want, and as soon as the first person walks in, we all know that it's undone.
Right.
And from an emotional standpoint, it's really important that we have clear cleaning protocols in place. And so I think that's been one of the things that we're balancing. We are going to move to all masks. Our past chief HR director is actually making a mask for every one of our almost 500 employees, which is kind of amazing. I know, it's really a remarkable donation, how she's giving back. But we also work with a significant deaf and hard of hearing community, a significant community of people with sensory disorders. And so we're looking at how do we make mask wearing possible given some of the clients who we work with. And I don't know if any of you had success in finding the masks that work for people who need to read lips, but we're struggling sourcing those right now.
Yeah, we're concerned about that as well in our disability programs. And also some of the clients there, it's more difficult for them to remember and follow the social distancing. And that was a program before where, you know, part of the culture was that it was okay, you know, to kind of touch and hug a little bit more than we might with other clients. I think some of the staff is struggling with the fact that they're going to have to enforce, you know, some distance from clients who might, you know, have a hard time understanding what they're doing. So, you know, I think that's going to be a unique challenge in that area.
all of the other priorities in terms of not overwhelming the hospitals, public health, all those things. But I think each day, if not each hour, it seems to become more challenging to hold to that sort of idea. And that's where it's very helpful to sort of get a sense of what others are doing and how what you're doing compares to what the government is suggesting and other things. Maybe the other thing I can mention, just that's slightly different, is we have talked with and will have at least a few hours of consultant services from an occupational health and safety expert whose specialty is sort of chemistry, biology, workplace hygiene, and that sort of thing, just so that we have that other voice helping the executive leadership team who doesn't really have that background in terms of, you know, does the PPE matter? How much does it matter? What does it work? We're going to walk the sites of the two buildings and, you know, get advice that way. But that was just one other element we're adding.
Yeah, I think that that's a challenge here as well, is that everybody's interpretation of what is safe is very, very different. And it goes from people who don't really see the need for anything to sort of the far other end of the extreme, where they want everyone wrapped in a bubble and, you know, testing every single day. And I mean, there's not a lot of middle ground. We've got sort of the whole spectrum. And so I think finding that balance and maybe bringing in an outside expert sounds like a great way to help kind of navigate kind of what the policy is going to be. I mean, the other challenge that's coming up for us now is that, you know, people want to, you know, some of our staff want to get on a plane and go on vacation. And while we, you know, you can't sort of say, I mean, it's legal to do, but then, you know, we're struggling with how do we treat them when they come back? And, you know, the only sensible thing I think is that they need to then quarantine for 2 weeks at home. But if their department has started a reentry process at some point in the future, and they're supposed to be in the office, let's say one day a week, and they can't come in, use additional vacation hours for that, or kind of determining what those policies are, you know, because people don't want to take their vacation if they can't go anywhere. They say, well, I'm already at home and there's nothing to do, you know, so those kind of questions are starting to come up. And while I want to be sympathetic to it, we, you know, I feel like we've gone a long way in as far as like not furloughing, not cutting hours, not cutting pay. And there's only so far we can go, you know, to be flexible and still protect the business. So I don't know if that's come up for other folks as well.
We're trying to take the same approach as Lee or the team in Minneapolis or St. Paul. I never remember which. Sorry, Lee. I think we've sort of already told our employees that they should settle in for the long haul. Like, you know, the stay-at-home order in Michigan goes through the end of May. I think it'll probably be extended again, but what do I know? But we've basically told people it's going to be a long time until we're back in the office the way we were, and we may never be back in the office the way we were. Shannon was talking about rotation, I think. And that's what we've been talking about. You know, I don't imagine we're going to be in the office all at the same time. Definitely not in 2020, if ever. And a lot of it will be led by the people we serve. So the only one of our businesses that was significantly impacted is our transportation business. So we're probably down 90% in terms of the volume of rides. And once those people show back up and say, we want rides, then obviously we'll have to have our drivers sort of in and out of the building and in and out of cars. But for everybody else, it seems like most of the people we serve are able to be served remotely. So we're not in a hurry to bring people back. And most importantly, it's not impacting our ability to, it's not an existential question for us, right? We're not like the JCC where if there's no physical building, there's no business.
I can tell you in Sarasota, Carl, one thing that we're looking at is the vacations. We've done an analysis of vacation hours, and we have a rollover policy that's probably going to have to get relaxed and allowing people to roll over more. We have a September 30th year end. So we're trying to evaluate what that would be and trying to make sure that people, it's a kind of liability for us. We're carrying over more days in the next year, right. but it's the right thing for the, there's nowhere for people to go. That mental health, they should take days off during all this anyway, but a lot of people don't want to do that. Safety and health, again, same as everybody else, the employee engagement and the morale has been increased so much because we're communicating regularly. We have team meetings, leadership team meetings, extended leadership meetings 2 to 3 times a week. And then that information gets deciphered. We've taken our monthly full meetings for the whole agency and made it twice a month to make sure that we had engagement there too. I will say one of the things, and we're hearing it from everybody, is there's a lot of lessons learned on how to work remotely and how to work effectively. That's probably going to transcend this whole pandemic. There's going to be opportunities to potentially even telehealth will be relaxed, and it's no longer going to be just rural. And so that's going to be a benefit. And I've found that our counseling department has been just more, the productivity is much higher. Now there's less cancellations and less no-shows and things of that nature. And the scheduling is more readily done. As we re-enter, we have a June 1st target. We told everybody 2 weeks ago, June 1st is our target, but we'll keep watching it. As everybody said, the science will dictate. We can do our work basically from remote. It's not as effective for some programs. Our seniors programs, we're staying in touch with them. Some don't get on Zoom, but even if they do, they don't feel as connected as when they walk in and have a group session and then a lunch and things like that. It's just not the same. Some of our camps for kids whose families have been disrupted by substance abuse, not the same. We do a camp over a weekend and we'll do hour and a half sessions and take breaks, but again, not quite the same. We're inside a building, Salvation Army, doing programs with those that are overcoming substance abuse and getting them ready to, and helping them get housed afterwards. We only have one person in that building who volunteered to do so, and that we were reluctant to have them do that. But so we're, I think what we're all saying is we're erring on the side of health and safety, the employees first. I think most people on here said that they haven't furloughed. We haven't either. I think most of us got the PPP, hopefully, and that's helped. And hopefully our grants haven't diminished during that time. And most of our grantees, I think, feel like we're still having impact, even if it's done differently. So I think we're going to look different. When we reopen, we won't have everybody in the building, and we're going to probably have our finance department first, because we haven't been able to issue paper checks. We've had to go through our banks to then send out checks to vendors. A little bit of a workaround, but we'll be much more efficient in that department. But our clients in the building probably won't be something immediate. You know, we do DocuSign now where we never did it before. We have, you know, we have Zoom, we have Doxy.me, we have a lot of ways that we're communicating. So there will be some good that comes out of it if you can find it. It's a lot of negative and a lot of bad, obviously, but I think there's some good that our business practices are probably going to change.
I can add to that.
Jeff had something to say, and then you talk.
Okay.
He raised his hand.
Thanks. I was going to say, we actually, so we moved our monthly staff meeting to once a week, and then we also gave people an exploding mental health day. So everybody got an extra day. You have to use it by June 5th, so nobody's going to squirrel it away for next year, but we're trying to model, even the management team is trying to model, like, it's really important that you take this day off. That's why it's designed this way. Peter mentioned the PPP. I know we can fall down a well and spend 10 days talking about it. And I know that, so I have responsibility for accounting and finance. I know most COOs don't. I'm curious if any organization has determined that because of the new guidance from the SBA that they have to return the money, or maybe this group just doesn't have the exposure to that to talk about it.
We had that conversation today, actually just before this Zoom, and we made the decision that we took the money in good faith. We anticipate even though we do have some reserves, we anticipate a loss of revenue in the next 6 to 12 months that will far exceed what we've taken in terms of the PPP. And therefore, and also the size of our agency is probably not going to be on anyone's radar screen because the size of our loan request was in the hundreds of thousands, not in the millions. So that we would likely be in good stead and not have an issue.
And did you seek legal advice to get that perspective that you're allowed to look 6 or 12 months in the future? Because the sticking point for me is really, if this is designed to keep people employed for 8 weeks.
Right. That's a crazy issue. I know. We not legal advice. I mean, yes, we have a member of our board who's a lawyer, but we also sought advice from a member of our board who's a CPA and who has been working on this other PPP loans for other agencies, other small businesses. And they both said that they feel we're in good standing, both from a legal perspective and from an accounting perspective.
But and Carl, I don't want to hijack this. If you want to talk about this.
Tomorrow, I just wanted to say that tomorrow there's the 4 o'clock CEO, COO check-in is just on this. But from what I understood, there's something with the endowment that if you have an endowment that you're not supposed to take it or they could take it.
Right.
Down.
So if you ask three people, you get five opinions. But I think the key is what is liquidity? Right. So they say if you have access to liquidity, you don't demonstrate need. But if that liquidity corresponds to restricted net assets like endowments, is that different than that liquidity corresponding to unrestricted net assets? And moreover, how do you define liquidity? So if our agency has cash and your agency has a bunch of Coca-Cola stock, are we equally liquid?
Right.
And I agree with Jonathan, like, our agencies are all probably well below the radar of what gets picked up. But when we're talking about decades of jail time, I'm not concerned about the radar. Like, it either needs to be, we need it or we don't need it.
Right. Well, go to that meeting tomorrow, potentially. Who should we have on that? Should we have a lawyer? I mean, what should we?
No, I mean, my perspective is that JFNA and many, many smart lawyers, you know, high-priced New York and Chicago law firms are trying to figure this out, and accounting firms are trying to figure it out, while also all of the local firms are putting out their own intelligence. I think for the most part, we're all just navel-gazing because the SBA hasn't even released its guidance. Mm-hmm. So the interpretations can't be valid because what they're interpreting is not knowable. It hasn't been decided yet.
Well, and the other thing is we're in a really unique situation where they're now trying to retrospectively change, you know, the guidance. So, I mean, you know, generally, if something is legal when you do it and the law changes in the future, you can't be punished for something that wasn't illegal at the time.
Right.
And so when these loans came out, we all followed the guidance, you know, as it was written. And you know, anyway, I think there's going to be a lot of litigation about this. And
clearly.
And we feel that our restricted assets in the foundation, that, you know, we don't consider liquidity decimating our foundation. And I mean, a lot of those are donor restricted and they're not for operations. And we have no ability to transfer those funds to another purpose.
Right.
And so we didn't count those in what we were projecting out as far as our cash needs over the next several months.
Okay, so there's a lot to talk about here, but potentially not now. I know Linda wanted to talk about something that we had been discussing.
Right. Back to programming for the long haul, I just wanted to add. So we're also assuming that we are in this for the long haul, and the way we approach programming is just going to change. So the goal isn't to get back in the building. And we're also complicated because our main location is inside a JCC.
Oh.
So that makes it even more complicated. We also have our food pantry in a separate location, but we can use that, but that's a smaller area. But what we're doing is doing an assessment, especially with our seniors, of what capability they have in their homes to be able to be online. And I know you guys are probably all familiar with UniPER. So you know, looking at Uniper and Zoom and like what it would take for people to be able to access this, they may like it better in the long run, participating from home, and it's certainly safer for everybody. So our goal is to try to get almost everybody online who can be online, even if they're 85, 90 years old, and if they could have a helper or somebody who's a caregiver in the home with them when they need to get online, that's what we're working on.
Lee, you
want to follow? Yeah, I mean, I don't know about other places, but here, one of the major obstacles for our seniors getting online has been our staff's preconceived notions about their ability to do it. Mm-hmm. In counseling, it's interesting. All of our counseling clients, regardless of age, figured out how to get on Zoom. And we had one case manager who just seemed to have an innate temperament that was good for teaching. And she volunteered because her job was more impacted and she had more time. She volunteered to call anyone who needed help, including board members. And she successfully got everyone she talked to online. Mm-hmm. So it's been really interesting that some of our perceptions that the seniors would never embrace it, they couldn't do it, when the need came up, they figured it out. And you know, I think we have to constantly remind our staff not to make those kind of assumptions.
And that's true because a lot of our staff are also older, and I think that they are uncomfortable. So making sure that we do the training and making them comfortable with it, making us comfortable. I'm one of the older staff.
One thing that worked for our board, which tends to skew older, was we started having weekly happy hours with them via Zoom. And they, you know, their motivation was to get on and socialize, which they were missing. And it was a low stress environment because if the technology didn't work, they weren't missing an important vote or anything critical. And so their anxiety went way down. And then when we got to important meetings, like our board meetings or finance meetings, they had already practiced 3 or 4 or 5 times. So, and we did that with some of our staff as well in the beginning, just to get them used to it, where we would do like a little happy hour or a drop-in time or a lunch and learn or something, but where there was no strict agenda. And that just reduced the anxiety a lot.
I'm listening to what everyone's saying, and I am a social worker by training. And I just think about the staff and you know, how they must mourn, you know, going into work. Like there's a real grieving period. And I don't know if we're thinking about that or people are talking about that with their staff, because someone said they're not going to come back for, you know, until the end of the year or not even this whole year. I mean, that's a long time.
One of the things we're struggling with, Connecticut is supposedly start reopening on the 20th of May, although we won't reopen then. So just by context, so we have 5 or 6 people in our office every day, and we've had people in our office since March. So but one of the things we're struggling with is what happens when we bring people back into the office? How will the existing staff feel? How will the staff that's been out of the loop for 8 weeks plus feel? Both from a safety and security perspective, but also from a here's what you missed perspective. Because there's no way that we effectively communicated to all of our staff, not that we have a huge staff, but effectively communicated to all of our staff all that's been happening in their absence. And we're about to convene a group of staff to have that very discussion, because I'm personally very concerned that some of the staff who have been burning the midnight oil here in the office for weeks now are just starting to be burned out. And when the new staff show up, what's the dynamic going to look like?
Yeah. You know, Lisa, to your point about people missing the office and the interaction, I used to send out a weekly message to the staff just to, you know, not work assignments, just sort of a message about keeping the morale up and that kind of thing. And since we've been at home, I've started sending it out daily. And it's mostly designed just to keep everyone feeling connected, you know, and it's really interesting, you know, every day I get responses from different people. So each message resonates with a certain group or whatever. but a lot of them say that it's one way that they feel connected. And so just to have one kind of thing pop up in their inbox every day that's not a work assignment or whatever. So,
but I'm suggesting that they talk together, that you like have a support group for your staff.
Right.
You have a real, you know, because I can imagine if I was a staff person and I wasn't able to see my clients or see my colleagues, you know, for so long. I mean, it's a loss.
One of the things we did related to that was we didn't want to put the burden on our counseling staff to lead a support group for other staff because we felt like they needed it too. So we reached out to a colleague at a local, another agency that our staff respect and admire, and he offered to do that for our staff. So he came in and led the support session for our staff so that everyone could kind of act as a participant and no one had to be into the therapist for the group. And that was received very, very well.
So Carl, I know we've had that request actually from our staff. And I don't know if there's another agency who's on the call who would be interested in partnering, but where we could provide that for another agency and have another agency provide it.
What a great idea.
For our staff. You know, we've encouraged them to take time off. They have things like the EAP and we do lots of conversations, but really, we know how hard it is on everybody. You know, the level of anxiety, Chicago's hard hit, so the level of loss that people are experiencing, the challenge of the calls that they're getting from you know, really difficult calls. And we do want to be able to provide some level of support. We have a weekly mindfulness session. We have some other things that we're doing, but it's not the same as having some sort of a group support. So I have staff who would be interested and would give their time to another agency to provide that, and we'd love to partner and trade experience.
I'll certainly reach out to our chief clinical officer.
So if anyone's interested,
let me know, and I can make
the shidduchs.
One of the things that we have, like we had this before, before we went all pandemic, we had a self-care committee that was staff driven, and they've really kicked it up a notch now. And so they provide almost on a weekly basis, not quite weekly, but self-care sessions that are similar to a support group in that everybody is invited. It's not an obligation. Nobody has to attend, but the schedule is cleared for that hour, and it allows all staff to participate should they want to. And it's also structured. So, for example, the last one that we did, we were working with a music therapy student up until her program was shut down because of this. Then she did a music therapy session with us. And it was actually, it was specifically on creating, using music for different aspects of your life, but also creating playlists, meaningful playlists. And so it was an activity that allowed people to have conversation, but also gave them skills that not only they could use for themselves, but they could also share with their clients, which was we've gotten wonderful feedback on it. Also, I mean, I don't know, I would have to explore this further, but I can't say enough about this music therapy student. Her session was spectacular. I would recommend it to anyone and everyone.
Let's do it. Let me have it, and I'll put it up on the a webinar for NJHSA. I'll get in touch with you, Shant.
Yeah. I just need to make sure that she's like allowed.
Oh, I hear you.
That's the only other thing. But she might be able to connect us with other schools as well in the U.S. So.
Lisa, I have a recorded, the Chamber of Commerce asked us to present really some self-care, and our counseling leadership did that last Thursday. They recorded it. It's a Zoom recorded. We're going to actually use it for our full staff meeting tomorrow morning. So if it looks good and everything, I'll send that to you or give you a Dropbox or something. Because anybody could access about 40 minutes or so of some self-care techniques and you know, things of that nature.
Terrific. I can put it up in our, you know, our affinity group folder if you get it to me. That'd be wonderful.
Our clinical staff also did a brief self-care, like, you know, just 5 minutes or so at our last two board meetings. Because we started to realize as we were meeting with individual board members on other business related issues, obviously they're going through all this as well. And so, you know, we wanted to normalize for them that it's okay, you know, if they get to a point where they need some help that they can reach out as well. And so, you know, the last two board meetings, a clinician came on and just did 5 or 7 minutes of, you know, general self-care and some education, and that was well received as well.
So Faye and Jeff also want to speak about something. So Faye, you go first.
So two things. I'm most concerned actually about our clinical staff. They look so ragged, mm-hmm. and they're not usually that open to, I mean, they're not thinking of themselves, right? But I'm really concerned about their ability to go the distance. So would love to hear anything about that. And then the other thing is our Holocaust survivor program. The Holocaust survivors are asking to be together with our staff now. And so we are trying to think through whether social distancing with masks and all that is appropriate and protective enough. And I know that there's a lot of legislation being considered now around liability and et cetera. So if anybody has any wisdom about how to make that decision, I'd love to hear that as well.
Okay, responses before Jeff talks, because it's probably not about the same thing.
No, sorry, I unraised my hand.
Oh, okay.
It was a holdover.
Okay. Elise, yeah.
Yeah, regarding the Holocaust, we have a large Holocaust program as well. And you know, some are good with doing a Zoom meeting or FaceTime on a cell phone, but they're feeling the loss of the connection because we hold a lot of socialization activities. We hold 2 a month every month. So what we've just in the process of starting is a newsletter that will go out. And of course, at the beginning, it's more coming from us. But what we're hoping is then the survivors are going to be sending us their recipes. And it'll be more an interactive newsletter that we can send to those who are computer literate. It'll go in an email. Otherwise, we'll snail mail it to everybody. And I'm not sure how frequently it'll be, but we want to rotate it as often as possible. So they feel like they're getting the attention.
We have a retired cantor who, prior to this, for several years, had been making home visits to people who are seniors who are shut in or can't get out or in nursing homes or whatever. And he's really ramped up his programming for homebound seniors. And so he figures out if they can do it by the telephone, he'll call and sing to them over the phone or play his violin or do whatever. If they can manage FaceTime, he'll do it that way. And somehow the music feels more personal than just like an email or a phone. I mean, they seem to respond really well to the music. And so, that's been a little bit of a help because we haven't felt comfortable yet being in the same physical space with, especially the Holocaust survivors. The ones that we have are I'm sure it's similar, very frail, multiple health conditions. We just haven't felt comfortable yet, you know, being in the same room with them.
That's a really good idea. I just wanted to say, and then I know Lee wants to talk, is that when I worked in Connecticut, there was something called friendly conversations or something, and they were all conference calls, and people who couldn't get out of their house would call at 2 o'clock and they would hear a cantor singing. Everyone would be on the telephone, or they'd have current events and they'd talk about what was going on in Israel, or they'd have a Shabbat service. And it's really easy now because conference call, you get free conference call, and every individual pays for their call, which is nothing anymore, you know. So that's something you could do. But Lee, you wanted to say something, I know.
Thank you. This is great, very helpful, different things to think about. And I particularly appreciate the focus on the clinicians and others who are really in that tough spot. And the example as a non-clinician that's continued to stick with me and trying to think about things is, you know, when therapists come out of a tough session with a client, typically they'll see if there's another therapist in the wing to debrief with and to unpack that with. And yeah, maybe they can pick up the phone and call somebody, but it's a lot harder now. And so any suggestions around how we can support them and support one another is great. And then a couple of just things that may be helpful to you or that other people can give me feedback on following up on some of the conversation. In terms of vacation, recognizing that same problem, and one of you mentioned possibly changing the amount that can be rolled over. So we offered the opportunity for staff to buy back vacation, which typically we don't allow. There's no borrowing and there's no, you can't cash it out. But we offered people up to, if they're full-time, up to 40 hours, so long as they would earn it between now and the end of the year. And the CFO, I think, is trying to figure out the extent to which any of that, those wages can be in the PPP funds. And we had quite a few people take advantage of it. And I think they really appreciated it, given that they, we don't have a lot of people who want to jump on a plane. I think they're wondering about that vacation. So that's one thing. And then in thinking about the, you know, what do you do in person? One of the pieces for us that feels like a possible priority, even if we don't do a lot of it, is new clients. So our staff are suggesting that it's hard enough with clients for whom, with whom they developed a relationship, but it, you know, it's mostly working. But as we're getting new intakes in career services, in therapy and other programs, it's really hard to start having confidence and trust with people when you haven't ever met in person. So I'm wondering if people are considering, or if anybody's thought about doing maybe the very first session distanced, but maybe that's an exception where people go in for that and then you go remotely after that. I don't know, but that's one of the things we're thinking about.
Yeah, do you have a response to that? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I think that, you know, as I think about it for us, that would certainly be more manageable because we could assign a large room that they could use for those sessions. And because the rest of the sessions would remain remote, you know, I think capacity-wise, there would be enough space to do that and still allow people to be at a distance that felt safe. So that might be a great, you know, compromise as we slowly transition back.
I know Elise wanted to say something, but Jeff, did you want to say anything about, you know, buyback and vacations or whatever it is that you were writing?
No, just we always have ETO buyback, and we let people buy 2 weeks or sell 2 weeks as long as they keep a week in their bank. And then the other comment I made was just Lee was talking about how that ETO buyback impacts PPP. We're looking more broadly at all personnel-related costs. So can we pull forward the timing of our 403B contributions or our pension liability funding, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, because I'm the one who signed on the dotted line and I don't really want to go to jail for 30 years, I'm more skeptical about our ability to maintain that good faith certification. But if we do, then obviously we want to maximize our forgiveness. So we're looking at all personnel related expenses.
We have not allowed a buyback of vacation time, but one of the things that we thought about doing is, and we don't generally allow people to roll over vacation other than into the very first pay period of the next year. But one of the things we considered is if they had unused vacation, letting them accrue it into their sick time bank. And the reason for that is because we allow people to accrue enough sick time over time that it would cover the time between, you know, a serious illness and when long-term disability kicked in. But it takes a long time for those days to accrue. And we figured if they had unused vacation time, at least one benefit we could offer, you know, would be to allow them to roll that into their sick bank. So God forbid they did get sick, they would not have their income interrupted, you know. And so that's what we're considering here.
But what happens if they leave before they use it?
We don't pay out sick time on, okay. So we pay out, we have separate, we don't have a PTO bank, we have separate vacation and separate sick time. So when you leave, we pay out all the vacation days, but not the sick days. And so I think an employee can accumulate up to 130 sick days, which is enough to get you through the 3 or 4 months till long-term disability kicks in. But it's not a liability. I mean, we don't have to pay it out if someone leaves. The only time you pay it out is if they get sick with a serious illness. So
does anyone else have anything? Laura, did you want to say anything? Nada? Anyone? Kathy?
I'll just say something real quick. And a lot is very helpful, and we are definitely on the same page of leading with safety. We've had a robust safety program at JFS for a long time, and that's how we're leading into our any transitioning. And something that I'm keeping an eye on and working with our statewide advocacy partners, and we'll also talk to the network advocacy group about, is making sure that the telehealth and telecommunications is in place, the waivers are in place for us so that we can really do this in a smart fashion, so that there isn't a switch flipped and then we don't have the access to the current waivers that we do for our telecommunications and case management and telehealth and therapy. So that's something we have to keep an eye on.
Laura, do you know of any groups that are doing advocacy nationally on this? Because one of my concerns is the minute the governor says that the state is open, right, that insurance companies are going to pull back and say, yeah, we don't need to cover it anymore. Right. And I think it would be great if we could all sign a letter together or something, encouraging that to not go away, because that'll put us in a difficult position.
Yeah, I agree. So I think there is a lot of national advocacy. There's the National Council on Behavioral Health is looking at it. There are other, thought leaders in the area in this that are doing it. And then on the state level, there are various statewide groups in New Jersey that we're a part of. Mm-hmm. And I plan to, talk about it with colleagues. The network's advocacy committee meets next week, and
right, we're definitely on it.
I'll be there as well. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
If there's more updates that come out of that advocacy meeting, maybe we can share with the group.
Sure.
So people know how to get involved with that.
So. Yeah. And I just want to say one more thing, Lisa. This morning, I was really feeling it, and I sent an email, and I'm in and out of the office, but I sent it, they were just on my mind, so I sent an email to all of the people that sit next to me, that their offices and their workstations are near me, and I said, hi, I'm missing you, and we've had lots of different communication, but I was really missing that experience of, standing in the hallway, and
yeah.
So I sent them a picture of my non-productive co-workers sleeping this morning, all my dogs, and it was a nice way to connect, but I was feeling it.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I want to be respectful of people's time, and we're right at 3:30 or 4:30 or whatever time zone you're in. But any last closing thoughts before we say goodbye for today? Well, I'll just add that I look forward to these calls so much. It really helps me feel less alone as I look at my agenda for the day, and I hope each of you got something out of it as well. So thank you for carving out the time.
Thank you all. Stay safe, and looking forward to seeing you next time, which I don't know when it is, but I'll let you know.
We'll figure it out.
Okay. Bye, everyone.